Tango Tango Papa 1883, November 24th, 2014.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Evansville. I think it's Evansville, Iowa. I've been pretty busy. Very busy the past, I guess it's been about at least 10 days since the last podcast. And I've been pretty busy. They've been keeping me really sort of bumping right up against the 70 hours, and that includes today. As of right now, I have 7 minutes left, and then after midnight, I gain 2 hours. Not going to be doing too much driving tomorrow. I've got about 13 miles to go. Right now I'm at there's a pilot truck stop that I'm parked at. I think it's Evansdale, Iowa. That's about 13 miles from where the load delivers tomorrow at noon in Cedar Falls, Iowa. I'll deliver the load, and then I'll probably end up coming back here to this truck stop, and I'll have enough time to do that. But really, I'll only have about 2 hours and some change all day tomorrow, and that's it. And then I pick up 12 hours at midnight tomorrow night. Today was Monday. So tomorrow is Tuesday, so I'm not going to be going too far tomorrow. And then I get 12 hours on new hours on Wednesday. I've been kind of all over the place. It was this afternoon when the load got unloaded. I unloaded at what's the name of the town? It was one of the suburbs in St. Louis, kind of uncomfortably close to Ferguson, Missouri. And of course, today was the day that they were returning the grand jury results. That came today, and then I noticed that they said, "Well, we're going to make the announcement at 9 o'clock tonight." And so I stopped at this truck stop a while ago, I happened to remember, and I looked, and apparently they're not going to indict the police officer. And from looking at the headlines on the Drudge Report, they're rioting in Ferguson. And I don't know that it was the people in Ferguson, but you got a lot of sort of rent-a-mob type people that are trying, sort of professional agitators that are trying to stir something up and kind of create and take advantage of a sort of a mob mentality. And to really sort of foment revolution and create all kinds of havoc and what have you. And so that's going on. Now, today was all day long today. It was Hazelwood, Missouri is where I unloaded at. And it was about 2:30 this afternoon when I got unloaded there. And then I went over to Edwardsville, picked up the load that I have now, Edwardsville, Illinois. And then that goes to Cedar Falls. But all day long today, it was like 39 degrees. And it was overcast, and the wind was blowing like mad. Very unpleasant day to be outside. And they waited until this evening. Now, I don't know what the temperature is in St. Louis at this point. It can't be much warmer. I think it might have been. I'll take a look here. I think it was supposed to get down to maybe in the 20s. Let's see. So we're going to see. Let's see. So St. Louis weather. There we go. 38 degrees right now. So the wind must have died down a little bit. It's 17 miles an hour. It's going to get down to 28. Humidity's 55%. So that's relatively humid for 38 degrees. With wind, that's kind of unpleasant. So apparently, but right now, I guess they're rioting and they're looting things and probably destroying their own neighborhood and, yeah, the typical thing. So, glad to get out of there. But, I don't know, the area I was in was a kind of a nice industrial park type area right next to this really nice mall, you know, kind of upscale shopping mall. You know, so it looked like it's a pretty nice area. So typically, I don't know about rioting, but typically the bad neighborhood is going to stay put. Typically, the bad neighborhood's not going to come to you. The bad neighborhood will typically stay put. Now, there's exceptions to that, and that includes crime. You know, any kind of crime. Now, these people were supposedly. I saw one article earlier, and they were going to send out text messages nationwide if it was the wrong verdict or if the guy wasn't going to get indicted. In other words, the police officer. They were going to send out text messages and maybe have riots all over the country. Now, I don't know if that's happened or not. I have no idea. the tragedy of a place like Ferguson, Missouri, or you know, which I guess is primarily sort of a black suburb. And then you have areas of St. Louis that are various neighborhoods that are like that. The tragedy of that is that you have people in cities that sort of take advantage. They end up kind of the scum rises to the top. The worst people typically end up becoming elected as a rule. That's not always true, but as a rule of thumb, the worst people always end up becoming elected because they're the ones that are willing to lie and cheat and steal and in order to advance. And then you have the people that vote for them that really want to be lied to because they're guilty. Guilty people love to be lied to. Rotten people, rotten. If you've got rotten character, then you're going to typically vote for someone that's more rotten than you are. So, but you have those people that get into power, and then you come along, and it's like a parent that spoiled one of their kids. There, you poor thing, and the spoiled kid is kind of crippled because he's been kind of robbed of any ability to kind of make his own way in the world, his or her own way, and they live in the basement, and mommy and daddy keep giving them an S and giving them that, and so the equivalent of that, once you scale that up, you have entire neighborhoods of people, and it's unfortunate they're black people, but it could be, it doesn't necessarily have to be black, it could be any group of people, but the black people are in the unfortunate position of they're easily identifiable, and they're easily kind of sucked into the groupthink. If you're born into that kind of a community, you're born into one of those communities, let's say pick Ferguson, Missouri, for example, your parents and all of the people around you are going to browbeat you to try to force you to have the same mindset that they do, the sort of take on the existing mindset. Resent the man, the white man is, you know, you're oppressing you and you're beaten down and you can never achieve and you're don't want to go to get an education and get out of there because you're acting too white, quote unquote, and you don't have any street credibility unless you've been in jail at least once, and the list of that kind of thing goes on and on. And the politicians come along and say, oh, there, you poor stupid thing, here, you're too stupid to advance out of your ghetto, but here, have a handout. I saw, of course, there's bunches of articles about Ferguson, Missouri in the past 3 months, but I saw this one, and the kind of the gist of the article was that, poor Ferguson, Missouri, you had the white, so-called white flight, because obviously the place is blighted, because you end up with the dregs of society, people with their atrophied souls, basically, are the ones that are willing to take the handouts, and people with any sense leave. You get the hell out of there. You're not going to stay in a neighborhood like that. You get the hell out, and then they're saying, well, poor Ferguson, it's neglected. Well, how can a neighborhood be neglected? Neglected by who? Is that racism because you leave a bad neighborhood, you move out, you get the hell away from it? How is that racism? And how do am I neglected? Am I a neglected person because somebody's not giving me a handout? No, I make my own way in the world. I don't expect anyone to give me a handout. And the idea that I would be neglected if I didn't get some government official or some government agency or government handout kind of handing out to me that I'm somehow neglected, that's absurd. They use the same kind of language. The elderly, the poor elderly on souls, they're neglected. Neglected elderly. Neglected by who? It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous concept. So there is no political solution to these kind of problems. The only solution happens on an individual level. The only solution that can happen is suffering can cause people to wake up. Now, it doesn't always. Suffering sort of puts your soul to the test. And if you can find yourself in the gutter, and that really, either literally or figuratively, there's all kinds of different gutters, but that can put you to the test. And then you find out what's in your soul. Find out what you're made out of. There are some people that would rather die in the gutter, and they do die in the gutter, and that serves them right if they die in the gutter. No point in feeling sorry for them. If I die in the gutter, I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me. Why would I want somebody to feel sorry for me because I died in the gutter? That's ridiculous. Again, But the only solution is really for people to find their morality. And of course, you know, they've been talking about executive amnesty, and we're going to invite all of these illegal aliens in, and so on and on. And the problem with that is that you're inviting people from third world countries, third rate countries, countries that where the morals, they never, you know, the morals are already in a bad way. And the irony is they're coming to a country, the United States in this case, they're coming to a country where the morals are already shot in large part, but it's still, they still think it's prosperous. They still think that they're going to somehow make it big. But they're coming to a place that is morally bankrupt. They left a place that's morally bankrupt. They're coming to a place that's morally bankrupt. And so you have possibly more morally bankrupt people coming in. And of course the theory is that that they're used to voting for people that will give them handouts. They come from some South American country or wherever. They're used to the government giving them handouts and clamoring for the government to not neglect them and etc., etc. So the theory is that they'll vote for big government because that's what they're used to. There is no solution to this other than we have a moral revival. Now, a lot of the Hispanics that are coming in, they're coming in from Mexico or South America, a vast majority of those people are religious. A vast majority of them are Catholic. Vast majority of them claim to believe in God. So it's possible that you could end up with there's a potential there for some sort of a moral renaissance or a moral revival. But it's going to probably have to come as a result of, it's going to have to revolve around religion. But that's the only hope. There is no hope otherwise. There is no political solution. And people that keep thinking that there is, I keep telling them, and people will still are, well, we got to get the right people in there, and they're going to start turning things around. No, they're not. You know, and then there's still a lot of people that think, well, it will just turn the economy around, but we want to be socially liberal, but fiscally conservative. We're going to have fiscal conservatism. Somehow fiscal conservatism is going to save us. No, it's not. Fiscal conservatism isn't going to save you from hell. So, anyway, I've made myself a bunch of notes here. Because I've been meaning to make a podcast and, you know, various podcasts. And then, so a lot of times I try to go ahead and write the ideas that I have down. Because if I don't, then, you know, they're gone and I kind of forget them. And in a lot of cases, I would like to talk about them. You know, of course, I've been talking a lot about idolization. idolatry and I'm seeing that everywhere. I'll be talking about that. One of the notes that I made, that I just kind of jotted down, one of the ideas, atheists and progressives want order. You know, the people, they want order, and the universe is full of order, I watch these shows, especially the documentaries about space and physics, etc., etc. And they talk about an order in the universe. They want order until it comes to morals. And then, strangely, there is no order, and then there's all kinds of gray areas. But they don't want order. No order when it comes to morals. Can't have that kind of, oh no, don't want that kind of order, no. But we can have all kinds of order. We want our order. We can see order everywhere as far as the laws of physics and thermodynamics and those kind of things. Oh, there's plenty of order, but when it comes to morals, oh no, 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 that's all gray areas. And they're hypocrites. Because if there is order in the universe, then that, if you're honest, there has to be moral order. And there is a moral order. And if you violate the moral order, you pay the price. You pay the price. Your soul atrophies. And think about this. Parents bring their kids into the world many times, perhaps out of ignorance, and sometimes not. And they deliberately end up, maybe they're under compulsion to do it, but they end up tripping their kids. So kind of from a psychological / spiritual standpoint, and cause the child's soul to atrophy, keep it in a stunted state of growth, just like the politicians in the big cities with the people in the ghetto, trip them up, keep them dependent, keep their soul in a state of moral atrophy. And then can't admit that you did it. And of course, a kid sees the parent. They can't put it into words, but they see the parent causing their soul to atrophy, deliberately causing their soul to atrophy, and they end up being tricked into hating their parents. And of course, that's the sin that we all end up committing. Hate your parents because they've caused your soul to atrophy. And then the worm that dieth not ends up passing from one generation to the next. And it just goes on and on and on. And resentment comes packaged with its own denial mechanism. And it just goes on and on and on. And humanity lives in a state of a sort of soul atrophy of the soul. One other thought that I wrote down here. hear people, you know, there's plenty of people that end up getting into, especially people that are retired, and sometimes they're just, they use it as a hobby, but they get into genealogy. And you can end up oftentimes with genealogy, and it depends on the family. Some families, like with my family, there was a period where my mom was kind of getting into the genealogy thing, and she was kind of, this has been a number of years ago, and she was writing down and, you know, kind of finding out about all these different relatives and, on her side and then on my dad's side of the family. And so in my case, a lot of that stuff, I don't really know the names. They kind of went in one ear and out the other. I think mom's got them written down somewhere. And so those names, you know, if I really wanted them, then she's got it all written down somewhere. And so if I ever really want to get into that, I can. But there's a lot of cases where, let's say, one of the parents has kind of a darker background, and perhaps they're ashamed of their background, or they're ashamed of one of their parents. They're ashamed of something that went on, and they try to shield that or hide it from their offspring. So you have people getting into genealogy, and there are plenty of people that really become obsessed with it. And the thought struck me that people that are really kind of getting into genealogy, they're sort of posthumously invading their dead relatives' privacy. They're kind of after the fact. They're sort of invading their privacy, those relatives that maybe they had things to hide. In their past, they had things to hide, and they didn't want their offspring to know about those things. And so the offspring, after they're dead, those offspring oftentimes start prying into their privacy after the fact. And I don't know how many people think of it that way, but it's really that really is the case. People are really trying to pry into the privacy of their ancestors, kind of after the fact. You know, and so... So what about us today? Let's say you have children. Are you hiding something from your children? Typically, if people try to hide things from their kids, those things eventually come out anyway. Sometimes people will have a child, and they put the child up for adoption, or even worse today, you'd have all these people that have had abortions, all these women that have had abortions, and or they don't even know who their dad is. How are they going to get into what happens when they try to get into the genealogy thing? You know, what happens if an illegitimate child gets into genealogy? And it does happen. But the whole thing, no matter how rotten your parents are, and let's face it, every parent, none of us are perfect. Human beings are not perfect. All of us have rotten parents. To one extent or another, the parents aren't perfect, and we end up resenting our parents, as I said before. And that's the sin. That is the mistake. You become what you hate. Resentment separates you from who you could have been. Once you resent, you're instantly separated from what you could have been had you not resented. Once you resent, you're presented with two wrong choices. You either go along to get along, or you try to rebel and do the opposite of the thing that you've resented. And in both cases, you're wrong, because you're not in the original state anymore. And the only way to get back to that original state is to give up the resentment. And it's as simple as that. And so the parent's function, the function of the parent is to restrain, you know, because we're imperfect human beings, and there's sort of a malevolent spirit that kind of inhabits us to a large extent. And that malevolent spirit is in the parents, but it's also in the child. Even if the parents are perfect, the child is not going to be perfect. Even if the parents kind of behave perfectly, the child is not perfect. And there's a little malevolent spirit in there. And so it's really the parent's function is to restrain the malevolent spirit in the kid without damage, because then if the parent handles it wrong, and it's very easy to handle it wrong, the malevolent spirit that's present in the child is going to end up further damaging the child. So it's the parent's function they must contain their own malevolent spirit in order to do it properly, but the parent's function is to restrain the malevolent spirit in the child. But in order to do that, they have to restrain it they have to be willing to see it and restrain it and within themselves. And you can't, the only way you can really restrain a malevolent spirit is to expose it to the light of day. You can't, if you resent the malevolence, let's say you have malevolence and you know that you have malevolence in you and you resent it, you're screwed. You're never going to get rid of it. You feed it energy when you resent it. And I know there are people that think that they can turn resentment into something positive, and you can't. Can't be done. And you can't roll your sleeves up and fix yourself. The only thing you can do is be willing to see what is in you without resenting it. And that's very easy for me to say, but it's very hard for most people to do, because their ego gets involved. If you can really see the malevolence within yourself without resenting it, that's sort of a tantamount acknowledgement that there is a God, because then God will sort of, you know, get rid of that, you know, kind of give you the power to, or, you know, to get rid of the, you know, the malevolent spirit then kind of has to leave. But before that, if you resent, you're still playing God. You, if you resent something within yourself, you see that you have, that there's something wrong in you, and you resent it, you're still playing God. You can't fix yourself. You have to be willing to see it without resenting it. And then an interesting thing happens. It's almost like a special cry goes up from your soul to your Creator, and then your Creator answers it. And it's not an emotional kind of thing. It's where, you know, people often end up going over the deep end is with emotions. But, you know, in order for parents to sort of restrain the malevolence in their kids, you have to be willing to look at yourself first and see what's in with, you know, because children tend to be like they're mirrors, because they sort of take on the nature of what's around them as well. And if a parent, you know, people are often they're really profoundly unaware of what their own behavior, their own bad behaviors. They don't have a clue what they're doing themselves. But then the kid ends up kind of mimicking, absorbing their environment. The parent around them is part of the environment, the major part. They sort of absorb that, and then the person sees that, the parent sees that in the child, and oh my God, you know, that I'm doing that. I don't want him to do that. And then, you know, they start yelling at them and so on and so forth. And then but the kid is just, to a large extent, the kid's just mimicking the parent, sort of reflecting the parent's nature, kind of do as I say, not as I do type of thing. That's what the parent, and of course that doesn't work. So on to the idolization. The reason, if you're going to have, you know, the idolization requires a demon. As I've said, and we're going to pick on Apple again. The Apple, the cult of Apple, sort of the church of Apple. The demon is Samsung. The demon is... it used to be Microsoft back in the day, you know, back before the iPhone. It was the demon was Microsoft. The demon was Windows. But then nowadays, really, the demon is Samsung, and the demon is Android, and the demon is, to a certain extent, Android. Amazon. But certainly the biggest demon is Samsung. And so that's if you kind of buy into the, you know, you're part of the Church of Apple and you're sort of idolizing Apple. And if you're a motorcycle person and you sort of idolize Harley Davidson, and then if you're sort of really in that mindset where you're idolizing Harley Davidson, then Yamaha and Honda Japanese motorcycles are the demon. You have a nasty name for it, rice burners. To ridicule the people that would dare buy those brands. Ridicule them. Ridicule their choice. Make them, belittle them. And so, anytime you see something that's being demonized. There's always a mindset behind that. There's always some sort of a cult-like behavior that is that ends up supporting. And it kind of struck me today, you know, because in the last, I guess it was the last podcast or a recent podcast, I was talking about tobacco kind of being demonized. And it's certainly, I'm not defending the tobacco or tobacco use, but it was demonized, and I was kind of having a hard time for a long time. I've had a hard time understanding why was that picked to be demonized, because there's plenty of other things that alcohol, all kinds of different drugs. There's plenty of things that could be demonized, but they picked tobacco, and then you see all these billboards everywhere, and and it's just really demonized. And I'm wondering, you know, what is the, which group is it that is this demonization supporting? But then it kind of struck me today. What group? There's another group of people that are just relentlessly demonized, and they're demonizable. So is tobacco, actually. But these people are really demonizable, and so many people end up buying into it, and it's sort of like it's an approved group to demon. You can really demonize them, and everybody should join in. And in fact, you'd better, if you're talking about anything, and you happen to hit on this subject, it's kind of like the scientists that have to say that they're atheists, that, you know, before they tell you what their theories are while they're being interviewed, they feel obligated to say that they're atheists. Then in the larger group, in the larger society, there's a certain class of people that you have to say that are terrible and you have to demonize them. What am I talking about? Can you guess? Gave you a little time to guess. I bet you didn't guess. Pedophiles. Pedophiles are universally demonized. And of course they're demonizable. They're bad people. But what they're doing is really bad. But they're sort of universally demonized. Now the problem, even if something is demonizable, even let's say your parent was really a rotten parent and you hate their guts and you feel like you're justified because they did you wrong. The problem when you resent, whether it's justified or not, you resent a person, place, or thing. When you resent, whether it's justified or not, your soul atrophies. There's the rub right there. You can say it's a sin and that doesn't have so much impact, but your soul atrophies. That's the bottom line. And so the problem, you know, you resent pedophiles. Problem with that is that keeps you locked in to your slavery, to whatever group. And in this case, I think it's just the society at large. So, you know, this is a universally approved demon. The pedophiles, they're bad. And so you have to resent them, and you have to keep resenting them, and say, and just keep thinking of how rotten they are, and that keeps you locked in. It keeps you locked into the groupthink. So I'm sure there are other ones, and they'll probably kind of end up popping into my head at some point. But that one, in particular, that one is sort of a universal one. even more so than the tobacco demon. And but there are plenty of them. I'm sure, as I say, there are other ones, and there are always people that are trying to start new ones. I saw, I don't know if it's still on there or not, but earlier today there was a headline on Drudge, or for the past couple of days, I guess, that, you know, there are these people that are claiming, and I didn't even bother to read the article, but there are these people that are claiming that Wi-Fi is giving them really bad headaches, and it's just terrible, and it's causing all kinds of problems for them. And that's complete hypochondria. There's no such thing as... you know, the Wi-Fi is not giving you headaches. There are plenty of natural background radio waves. You're being bombarded with them all the time. Even, you know, forget about the man-made stuff. There are plenty of natural... And it's natural radiation. It is radiation, by the way. The sun, you know, we live in... If you look at the sun on a scale of the universe, our sun is nothing. The sun that comes up in our sky every day, we think of it as gigantic, unimaginably huge. It's really minuscule. It's nothing. On the scale of the universe, it's just a little speck of nothing. Infinitesimally small, nothing. And we're in our little planet, goes around and around and around that sun, orbits 93 million miles away, and it's like it's right on top of it. And so as creatures, our world is being irradiated constantly. Not to mention all kinds of cosmic radiation. There's lots of radiation, natural background radiation. There's tons of radiation. We're bathed in it. Visible radiation, the light that we're able to see with our eyes, but then beyond you get into the other spectrums of light and that we can't see, because we can only really see a very narrow range of the spectrum. Little tiny narrow sliver of the spectrum is what we actually see visibly, but that, you know, there's tons of other spectrum that's left over, and we're being bombarded with that constantly. But in this case, people are hypochondriacs, people are suggestible, and so there's an idea, and so someone is trying to get this started, that, oh, it's Wi-Fi is bad. Someone's trying to demonize it. People are trying to do this all the time, by the way. And there are plenty of people that try to start groups with varying degrees of success. You kind of start your group based on some kind of resentment. You know, resent Wi-Fi. Or resent cell phones. Resent computers. Resent pedophiles. Resent people that are smoking, resent tobacco, resent this, resent that. We'll start a group. It's absurd. So if you want to resent, go on, go ahead and do it. Have at it. Enjoy it. Enjoy as your soul atrophies, because that's what you're really doing. You're causing your soul to atrophy. You're causing your soul to atrophy. As you drive the wedge between yourself and your conscience, you're causing your soul to atrophy. As you find someone that agrees with you that wrong is right and right is wrong, that shacking up is great, that you know, killing your baby is a great thing, you're causing your soul to atrophy. So anyway, I've got a short piece of audio sent to me by Joel via Voxer. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. It's Joel. Notice you must be either on your way home or almost there, or you've just been quiet podcasting-wise. And I just generally don't have a lot of time to watch the YouTube videos you put out. I'll watch one on occasion. But I usually, typically, even on the Twit podcasts, I like to listen to the audio on almost all of them. There's a few that I will watch regularly. Ham Nation, I can kind of watch / listen to it. A lot of the times with Ham Nation, this show is a very visual one, but I generally will listen to like Twit itself. I'll listen to it instead of watch the video. I just don't have the time to watch video. So that's why I like your podcast more than I like your videos. But I'll still watch one on occasion. So hopefully you're going to get to make it home and have some time off for Thanksgiving with your mom and dad. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Tom.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. Yeah, I have been, my excuse, I guess, is that I've been pretty busy the past 10 days, and I don't know, it's pretty easy to do the videos, but now, I don't know, for the last, normally I've been doing one every night, and even if it's just short, but I don't know, the past, at least last night, and then there was another day in there where I missed it, and just didn't really have enough time, and needed to get to bed, and I'm not going to do this stuff if it's going to cut into my sleep, and that includes the videos. So I don't know, but I do enjoy the audio, doing the audio podcast if I have time. It's kind of hard to explain. I really benefit from myself personally from talking about these things, because it kind of helps me, even though I've these ideas, most of them you've heard them 1,000 times, but I don't always end up expressing them in the same way, and oftentimes by kind of talking about them, I'll end up sort of seeing things in a different, you know, from almost like a different angle. It's the same thing, but it's from a different angle. And that's really beneficial to kind of be able to see something from a completely different, it's the same thing, but it's from a new angle. And these ideas really do stand up to scrutiny. If you're able to see them. Now, if you're separated from you're separated from your creator, you're separated from conscience, these ideas, it's going to sound like I'm just talking in circles, and they're just kind of going around and around and around, and it won't make any sense. And then there are some people that it might make some sense to them as they hear me talk about them. But then you ask them after the fact, well, what did he talk about? And they couldn't really explain it, and they're not even sure what I said. You have to come to these conclusions yourself. You have to be able to sort of come to these ideas on your own. I mention it once in a while. If you go to my website, truckertompodcast.com, up at the top there's a link that says meditation. Click on that link. And I've got about four files that are hosted on my site. Right-click, download them onto your computer, your device, phone, tablet, whatever. Burn them to CD if you wish. They're MP3 files. Very simple technique, teach you how to meditate. teach you to kind of come out of your thoughts. Bring you to a state of objectivity. And that's actually very important, because if you can come to that, if you can find a state of objectivity, that's where your creator is. Now, the meditation exercise is not, that's not going to save you. It can only bring you to the state of objectivity. It's not going to, that's not salvation. But that will bring you to a state of objectivity where you can come into contact with your creator. Instead of running away from what you think of as a guilty conscience, allow that, you know, deliberately stand still and allow that to catch up to you. You may feel guilty initially, but you only have to, if you do it properly, you only have to face it once. It's not one of these things like the church where they say, oh, you have to feel guilty, Catholic, you have to feel guilty all the time. No, you don't. Once you've made friends with your conscience, there is no more guilt. Now, it will set you straight. If you do something wrong, it's going to set you straight. And if you do something really wrong, it ends up, it's sort of like a laser beam. I can attest to that. But the function of your conscience, the function of that is to keep you on the right path. But if you can make friends with that, then you won't. If you can really make friends with that conscience, what you think of as a guilty conscience, if you're really kind of compatible with it and want to make friends with it, then you won't do anything to violate it, to violate that relationship. But you have to have the want to. It's not something that's just gonna, that you can just kind of add, you know, think, well, I'm going to do this now. I'm going to have some advantage by doing this. Can't think that way, because it's not going to do you any good. You have to have the genuine desire, whatever that is. That's a mystery. I don't know how that mechanism works. Some people have it. Lots of people don't seem to have it. In any case, that meditation is on my website. Give it a try. Can't promise it's going to help everybody. I do believe it will help most people if they We'll just give it a try. And then if you do find that it helps you, it's up to you to continue with it. So, anyway, need to be cutting this off, get it assembled and uploaded. Hope everyone is having a great week so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.
Does your life suck? Is it a living hell to be you? Do you ever wish you could just end it all? Or do you have that pesky aging parent, nagging wife, or insolent brat of a kid you wish you could just eliminate? If so, know that you are not alone.
Planned Parenthood proudly announces a new business unit, Planned Parenthood Death Centers. At Planned Parenthood Death Centers, we can help you overcome life's mistakes. At Planned Parenthood Death Centers, we believe that every life should be a planned and wanted life. Planned Parenthood Death Centers, coming soon to a location near you.
All services must be prepaid in advance, cash only.